studios in Eugene, Oregon, it's Oregon Update with your hosts, Cliff and Robin. You can join Cliff and Robin by dialing 646-721-9887 or by email at talk@krbnradio.com. And now, here's your hosts, Cliff and Robin.
Dynamic duel is back because the other half of the duel, which is, makes it a quad, is on assignment, and which is Cindy, and Bradley has got a family emergency. So that just leaves Cliff and me, and I'm Robin, by the way. Good morning.
And I'm Cliff. Good morning to you as well.
And welcome to Oregon Update.
What kind of weather you got up there anyway?
Right now, we actually have non-standard Oregon weather. I mean, we can actually see clear skies, and it's dry outside and kind of nice.
Well, it's getting more standard hit down here because it's cloudy, and hopefully it's going to clear up a little bit. But it's weather this year has been totally insane. It really has. I mean, our summer is like a month late.
Well, a month late, and from what I understand, Oregon, which especially the city of Eugene, which I have dubbed the city of Atlantis, I think they said they had over 250% more rainfall this year than since they started keeping track of it.
Well, I don't know about that. Actually, the rainfall this year is almost a lot closer to what the normal is supposed to be. When I first moved here, God, it's been 10 years ago now. Time does fly. When I first moved here, I researched what the annual rainfall was and all that sort of stuff for Eugene, because they didn't really have it for Cottage Grove. I didn't find it anyway. But Eugene and Seattle are really pretty close, 39 inches of rain a year. And the thing is, for the last 10 years or 8 years or 9 years or whatever it's been, we've been in drought conditions here. We have only had about a quarter of the rainfall that is supposed to normally fall in Lane County area here. So people are not familiar. It's been so long they've considered this normal. And so now that we've gotten back to having lots of rain, everybody's upset and doesn't realize that that's actually normal. Or something like that, if you follow what I'm trying to say.
Well, my advice to anybody that two pieces of advice that anybody decides to move to Lane County. My first piece is don't, because the economy. My second piece is bring lots of navel jelly.
Oh, really? To cover everything so it doesn't rust?
Exactly.
Bathe in it weekly?
Bathe weekly. Our rain actually seems to be a little bit more acidy. I was working on the cars a couple weeks ago, and some rain got on my tools, and they just rusted up almost before my eyes.
Yeah, I've got to tell this. I'll try to make it real short, but I think I've told you before, but you want to talk about acid. I lived in Needles, California for a while and ran a station called KSFE in Needles, California, and there was so much acid in the water and in the soil.
How much was there?
It literally ate through the rebar that held up the tower, and the tower fell down.
Oh, no.
And it was just, it was just acid in the soil that ate through the rebar. And I will have to admit, it took it like 40 years to do that, but still, it did it. And I would have never dreamed that, because there was two pieces of rebar holding each set of guy wires up, so it had to eat through two bars of rebar in the ground to have the thing fall down. But it did, and it just blew me away.
Wow.
That's what you call a lot of acid in the soil and in the water. Of course, you couldn't drink the water. They actually processed the water and did as much as they could with it, but it was still almost totally undrinkable.
Now, that's something you haven't heard anybody talk about in a long time is acid rain.
Yeah, that's true.
But of course, that's too loud. Al Gore might have another crusade on it.
Really? You don't get much acid rain in Needles, California, only because you don't get much rain, period. It rains like 3 times a year, and that's about it.
Because
it is the desert. It is in the middle of the Mojave. Well, not in the middle, but it's in the Mojave Desert.
Well, and speaking in the middle of everything, I'm going to throw the phone numbers out there real quick. There he was. You want to hear him again?
that was quick.
646-721-9887. Give us a call. We got Kind of a wide range of topics to talk about today. You can join us in the chat room. We have two chat rooms, one at our homepage, krbnradio.com, where you do not need an account to participate, or, of course, on the standard Blog Talk Radio page at blogtalkradio.com/krbn. You can send us an email, talk@krbnradio.com. You can follow the show on Blog Talk Radio. You can listen to the archives or on our website or on Facebook or on Twitter or on iTunes. So we're all over the place. There's no excuse for you not to call in right now at 646-721-9887.
That again is 646-721-9887.
Call collect or direct. Operators are standing by. Actually, if you call collect, we're not going to answer, so it doesn't matter.
Actually, call collect if you want to. The operators are not going to accept it.
Yeah.
Whatever. But nowadays, you know, that's one thing. Nowadays, you don't really have to call collect anymore because everybody's got cell phones. And, I mean, they usually, well, I guess not always, but most of the time, cell phones will go anywhere.
That's right. And for anybody that was born in the last 20 years, a collect call is where the other person pays the charges.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that amazing?
That's just like, you know, this is just like the 21st century. And we're kind of old.
Really?
In the digital age, I'll put this out there as one of those, there's a word for it, but in the digital age, which way is clockwise?
It took me a second, but yes. That's a good question. Clockwise. That could mean something totally different than what direction things are going.
Exactly. I've had teachers, instructors tell me that some of their students nowadays in school, like the elementary schools or whatever they call them now, can't even look at an analog clock, you know, analog clock being one with hands.
You know, and I still am old enough that I can tell the time faster by glancing at an analog clock than I can a digital clock. Because a digital clock, I literally have to sit there and look at it and read the numbers. And, of course, my eyesight isn't that great, so it takes me a little longer to do that. But an analog clock, you can just glance at it. And the only problem I have with analog clocks is some of them have second hands that are so big that they look like the minute hand. And so you get a little bit deceived there. But most of them are fine.
Yeah, you're sitting there just staring at the clock going, boy, time is flying.
Yeah, really. Oh, yes. Well, on to bigger and better things. I wanted to bring up the fact that David Wu has resigned. But, you know, in typical David Wu fashion, you know, you would think, okay, I'm gonna give you my resignation. I'll be gone tomorrow, and I'll pack up my desk and all that sort of thing. But no, he says his resignation will become effective on the resolution of the debt ceiling crisis. Which means he may never resign. They may never resolve that. I don't know.
Well, for our out-of-state listeners, you want to summarize who David Wu is and what's going on?
Okay, David Wu is a Republican representative or Democratic representative from the state of Oregon, and he has done some unusual things. But the worst thing that he's admitted to is aggressive and unwanted sexual behavior with a young woman. That he knew her family and all that sort of thing. But it's a sexual thing at that particular time. He's done, you know, they keep showing this picture of him in this tiger suit. I didn't find anything wrong with that. You know, that's a little unusual, and why would you post that on the internet? But still, and maybe he didn't post it on the internet. Maybe he just got that picture. But that's what they show all the time, and I didn't find anything wrong with that. But the sexual advances that he's done and that sort of thing, that's bad, and consequently I would want him out of there for that reason. But they also, people in the House have said that he's not really that good at his job either. Basically, there's various things that he's done that have been less than stellar. And so nobody's going to be real sad to see him go, I don't think. But he has announced to the Oregon newspapers that he is on his way out. And who knows when that's going to be, because he's based it on or tacked it to the debt, raising of the debt ceiling. And I don't know what's going to happen with that. That's the thing we need to talk about today really is that ceiling idea, and why, and if, and what, and all that sort of thing. So anyway, so I'd like to say goodbye to dear David.
And if I can throw a couple more things out there, David Wu was recently reelected in 2010, even after, that was after his deal with the Tigers. And who knows, that may be the normal wear for people in Congress. I don't, or the House of Representatives, which I think would be an improvement. But no offense, but yeah, he got 54% of the vote, defeating Republican challenger Rob Cornelis. I'm probably spelling it or pronouncing it wrong, C-O-R-N-I-L-L-E-S. And but the point is that even with all the problems, you know, people put him back in. Well, the deal with the teenager apparently was the daughter of a longtime friend and campaign donor. So the, I don't know, but it, with all the stuff going on with our representatives and everything, is just, I mean, what happened to the honor of,
even the tiger suit, by the way, is better attire than the wiener was in, so, because he was in his shorts.
Yeah, thanks for that visual.
if he was well built and had a good body or something, that might be one thing, but he doesn't. So it was just sick, in my opinion.
Well, like I say, and what's in a name? Well, you have Wiener with his.
If I had the name Wiener, I wouldn't. I would be so careful to be very, very normal. You know, I wouldn't do anything out of the ordinary. Believe me, because you attract attention to that name, and people are going to just go bananas.
Yeah, I'm thinking of. I can't say it on the air.
But we could be alone. You're right. But there is a lot of things you can think with that name.
Yeah, but I mean, like, okay, like Wiener, and which, of course, we know the story behind that. John Bobbitt, we know the story behind that. you know, like I say, what's in a name?
Depends on the name entirely. We've just realized that, you know.
Yeah.
So, but outrageous. But anyway, he's out of the way, and we don't have to worry about him anymore, I assume. Who knows? Did he have any other elected office in Oregon before he went to Washington, D.C.?
Let's see. He won re-election 2004 over, why can't these guys have the John Smith names? Goli Amerai. In 2006, over State Representative Derek Kitts and two other party candidates. In 2008, there was nobody running against him, so he obviously, nobody running against him, and he captured 71% of the vote.
But, okay.
Well, I guess there was four minority party candidates, which I hate to say it. Well, I don't know how it goes with that, but like the presidential election, you know, third party candidates, is, don't waste time because you won't get elected because of the electoral. But that just brings up the whole point, though, is the quality of the candidates. Have we become so lackadaisy that we just don't care anymore?
Well, I don't know about that. I think we've been that way for a long, long, long time. But we are actually becoming more aware of what's going on and becoming more caring. I don't know if you saw the speech the other, what was it, a couple nights ago that the president made where he urged people to call a representative or to write or email.
And don't say, and force me to resign.
Well, that's the thing is, I don't believe he thought he would get that many bad phone calls, but it was basically, and it surprised me, it was about 50-50 people who were against him and people were for him. But the thing that did happen is the email, there were two or three websites that literally went down. It was overloaded so bad, and the phone lines have been full for the last 2 days. You got basically mostly busy signals because it almost went to the point of swamping the phone system and knocking it off as well. So there's a lot of people that are more and more interested and more aware of what's going on and ready to do something about it. So if he thinks that he's going to pull this thing and get it reelected, I think he's got another thing coming because we already showed that with less response from people than we have right now, we actually changed things in the House. and we elected a whole bunch of new people. And I think in 2013 or 2012 or whenever the election is, excuse me, that we're going to make a huge change. And I think one of them is going to be him. But I urge everyone to email their congressman or their representative or both, and or just send emails to whomever you can think of, and everybody's congressman, calling for the resignation of Obama, because he is making a mess out of things.
Well, and one thing I really got to give credit to John Brumenauer is that, I mean, Obama's getting really upset because nobody's playing his game. And like Brumenauer not even returning his phone calls. The president came out, I guess, a day or two ago, and like you're saying, is trying to appeal to the people. And Brumenauer came out with a press conference immediately after, kind of going, yeah, right, this is BS. You know, and even came on Rush Limbaugh, and after the president comes out, says, oh, yeah, we're getting close, we're coming up with a deal and everything. And Brumenauer says, nope, we have no deal. We're not giving in. We're not going to do this. We're not going to, you know, our people are saying, hey, we can't afford any more taxes. And where does it stop?
Well, see, I've followed all of these press conferences and these speeches on the air on television and watched what they were doing. And it really upsets me because Obama has still never actually put forth an actual plan. All he's come up with is an outline. He's never come up with an actual bill or anything that has any specifics in it. The House of Representatives have come up with two bills that have actually passed the House and were passed on to the Senate. The last one, which is probably the most prominent one and the best one involved, they didn't even give it a chance to be looked at. They tabled it immediately upon coming to the Senate. And so it's just stuck there. It can't do anything. And it's the only – well, it's there are two. And they both had good things. But this, I think, was the best one. But the point is, I think – they've got to do something about the tax codes, and that's something that they've talking about making it an amendment to the Constitution. If that's what you have to do, that's what you have to do. But something's got to be done, because people are just people, and specifically Obama in this case I'm thinking of, just spending willy nilly, just whatever they want, they go ahead and spend it. This debt ceiling thing that they're talking about. Again, Boehner has the only real solution with the House, and they passed it, and that's the one that they tabled. But the debt ceiling actually is an artificial thing right from the beginning. It's something that they made up, and that doesn't need to be there. And the idea, if you don't pass the debt ceiling, if the government is going to end, it's not going to happen. Nothing is really going to happen, because if you don't pass the debt ceiling, because, you know, we're borrowing from our own people, borrowing from Americans mostly. It doesn't have much to do with what China is loaning to us or other countries are loaning to us. It's within the country. And the problem is that they've had this thing for years and years and years, and the president and the House and everybody's just accustomed, because you see, that debt ceiling raises the amount of debt that we can borrow, but it does it after the fact. It's after we've already spent that money that they raise the debt to cover what we've spent. Well, that's not quite the way it should be done. And so we need to just get rid of that entirely and change it so that that's not the way they do business. You don't have a case of where you just go spend whatever you want to and then pass a law that says you can borrow enough money to pay for it. That's got to end. We're spending $120 billion more every month than we take in revenues. $120 billion, it sounds like a lot of money. It's really not that much money. And we could easily find a place to save that $120 billion, probably at least half or more of it out of defense spending, because we just simply don't need to spend that much money on defense. We're sending a couple of billion dollars to everybody. Every little podunk country in the world gets a couple billion dollars in
exactly
aid from us, and that isn't necessary. So I'm sure we could save a huge amount of money by just not sending all that money out, and then and bringing. And the other thing is, Obama has gone war crazy. He's got us in like what, three or four new wars.
At least three wars right now, yeah.
And as well as Afghanistan and Iraq that we're getting out of, but we're in Libya and Syria and something begins with a T. That we're in, you know, supposedly we don't have anybody on the ground and we don't have any foot soldiers there, so we aren't involved. But hell, we aren't involved. We're paying for the damn things.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you have boots on the ground or not, which is what he said. No boots are going to be on the ground. Well, yeah, we don't need people to actually set foot. I mean, we can do things from a distance, but what's the difference, you know?
Well, and the big thing is we can do them with aircraft, we can do them from a distance, but we still pay for them. We are the financing, and we are out of money, folks. We can't be the financing for everybody and still stay in business as a country. So we've got to stop doing that. And we almost all, because $600 billion is our defense budget at the moment, but that's just the main budget. That doesn't count all the money we're spending on building war planes and all this kind of stuff. It's closer to $1 trillion. So if we could save just a eighth of that, would be our $120 billion a month, and we'd be fine. So and I don't think it would be that hard to do. And we could take some away from home. There's a lot of things at home that we're wasting money on as well. But we need to have somebody who has some actual smarts sitting down and deciding what that is. Because if you cut back spending on highways and bridges and things like that, you're just fooling yourself, because sooner or later you're going to have to rebuild those things and you're going to have to repair those things, or we're not going to have highways. So there are certain things that you can cut back and other things that you can't, and we've got to sit down and have somebody who has some actual sense and give them the authority to make those decisions, because we don't seem to have the common sense to make that decision in the House and the Senate.
Well, and speaking of that, you know, because the games that they play in Washington, I read an article the other day where the House was trying to sneak some of their own little agendas into the bill for the debt ceiling. You know, kind of like what they did with the Obamacare. You know, they snuck in the deal about any purchases over $600, you have to file a 1099 for. You know, so in other words, playing those games, but they got caught at it. But one thing I wanted to ask you is that we've heard a lot from President Obama that's, don't call my bluff. Do you have any idea what his bluff is?
His bluff is that he won't accept the House's proposals, and that we'll go past the debt ceiling limit, which, if you actually look at it, is really absurd, because the debt ceiling, we run out of money on May 16th. It's not August 2nd. August 2nd, what's his name? Can't think of his name at the moment.
Well, when you think about it, okay, like you say, they run out of money. Well, they have a continuous cash flow of revenue coming in, but they're making it sound like, okay, August 2nd, boom, we're totally broke, banks are empty, that's it, you know, we're done, you know, lock the doors on your way out. But
actually, that's not the case. As I say, we ran out of money on May 16th, and Geithner, that's his name, said that he can move things around and change things and such and keep us solvent until August 2nd, and then we're just totally out. But that's not the case either. Like you say, there's always money coming in. If we simply stop spending so much money and make sure we spend a couple of dollars a month less than what we have coming in, that solves the whole problem. It may take a while to get back into a smooth flow again, because we've let it go for so long, but we've got to do that. And that's what the Republicans' cap trade and whatever it is bill has allowed for, is doing that. And we've got to, if not that bill, one similar to that. But right now what's happening is Obama has just set his feet in the sand and said, okay, I'm not going to do this, period. I'm going to get my way come hell or high water. And that's why we've got to get him the hell out of there. He's Yes, this has nothing to do with logic or responsibility or fiscal responsibility or anything else. This is just me against you, and he wants to win. And that's not the way we should play the game. We're destroying a country in the process of doing this, and that's where I say we've got to get him out of there. We need to email our representatives, whoever they are, and call for his resignation, because that's the only way to get him out of there in a hurry is to call for his resignation.
Okay. Now, it's not just him either. I mean, if you think about it, we're in this predicament right now, not because of just Obama, but because of everybody else in the House of Representatives and Congress, in my opinion. But take a look at how we are looking to the world right now. You know, we come across this, you know, world power. Well, we are the world power.
Not anymore.
Well, okay. Well, anyways, we come across to this sovereign nation, and we can't even run our own house. And here we are. We're at the last minute scrambling because the world's going to end on August 2nd. And now we're really scrambling because we're worried about our credit rating, losing our AAA credit rating. But, you know, referring it back to where you and I can relate to our own budget, if we ran our own houses the way that they're running the country, we would lose everything. We already would have lost everything that we had.
Well, unfortunately, see, I believe we are running our own houses the way everybody's living on a credit card. Everybody's living on credit of some sort. And I made comment years and years and years ago before I even was interested in this sort of thing. It didn't make much sense to me. Not everybody can live on credit. You can't live that way. You've got to have money somewhere along the line, and we're not doing that. We're all living above, almost all of us.
Well, even if you're living on credit, if you I don't know how it is nowadays, but you know, if you have four or five or six credit cards and you're maxing out your credit cards, those companies are going to be looking at you, going, you know, you can't really manage your debt too well, and you know, we're going to raise your interest rates, and we're not going to give you. We're not going to increase your credit limit, and especially if your debt to income ratio is pretty bad.
You know, that's exactly what they're equating it to, is your limit on your credit card, and right now our limit on our credit card as a country is $14 trillion. But the point is, it's already too late. We by the time Moody's and S&P have said that they're worried about your credit rating and they're liable to downgrade you, it's already too late. The rest of the world, they've already mentioned that and put it in the news, and the rest of the world has heard that, and the rest of the world is already on notice that we can't pay our bills. I mean, that's already what it has said. So even if we do pass this and go to the next step, we're still going to have problems because things are going to change, because we've already gone past the point of no return.
Well, let me throw this out real quick, and we're 30 minutes into the program. 646-721-9887 if you'd like to get involved in the conversation or join us in the chat room. Let me throw this question out to you. Right now, like I say, Congress and our representatives and Obama are, you know, talking about balancing the nation's budget. How many of them actually have a background in accounting?
Well, actually, the ones who have a background in accounting are not doing, not making up the bill, or not. They're not stepping.
Yeah, that's my point. What makes them an expert, or even qualified, to even negotiate this bill? I mean, you got the Gang of Six. I don't know why they picked them or what their backgrounds are, but in fact, until last week, I never even heard of the Gang of Six.
The Gang of Six was picked by the president.
Okay. And what are their qualifications?
Let's listen to this. The Gang of Six was picked by the president, and they were picked a long time ago. And they did their thing, and they worked out a budget, and they worked out a program, and they presented it to the president, and the president said, screw it. I don't like this. You didn't do what I wanted, so we're not going to go for it. So the Gang of Six had sat around on their heels for a long time and became a Gang of Five. And because one of the guys just said to hell with it, but and they just sat there and did nothing because it doesn't do any good to do something if the president is only... See, that's the problem. The president says, we've got to compromise. Now, you've got to come and do it my way, because that's the compromise. I'm not going to do anything your way. You've got to do it my way. And that's what he considers compromise. And he won't back off of that. So there's no such thing as compromise. So it's never going to happen. Consequently, the Gang of Six became the Gang of Five. And then this one guy, I can't remember his name, the sixth person, came up with an idea, and they took him into their fold, and the president accepted that. Again, though, it's not anything specific. They took an outline. And I'm not going to give the president, at least if I can have anything to do with it, I would not give the president the opportunity to run with that, because he doesn't have any specifics. He doesn't have any numbers in there, and nothing is on paper that's concrete. I mean, that's the difference between the House and the bills that they passed. They actually wrote it down, put it together, and made it specific, and passed it as a bill so that it's actually there. And you can read it, and you can see it, and you can see what it accomplishes it. But that, of course, the president isn't going to go for, because he didn't get exactly what he wanted. He wants full control with no restraints. And that, we've already seen what he can do with it. He's doubled the budget or the obligations of this country in just 2 years. It's taken us 74 years to get where we were, and then he's doubled that in the last 2 years. Now, that doesn't make any sense.
Well, and even people in the... in Washington now are kind of asking the question publicly, is Obama literally out there to destroy the country?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think he is. But I don't think he's out. I don't think he sat down and said, okay, I'm going to destroy the United States. I think he's just so ingrained into the idea that he will not give up. He will not give in. He's going to get his way. And he's so into that, that he'll let the country go to hell in the process of doing that. You know, I don't care if the country falls apart. I'm going to get my way. He's the most spoiled human being on earth.
Well, and from what I understand, he doesn't have any, I'm going to call it real life experience, because, he's never owned a business. He's never ran a corporation. And so the real world doesn't always play by, you know, black and white rules. I mean, what looks on paper doesn't work sometimes in real life.
That's possibly true, but when you got, that's the idea of having a House and a Senate. If you've got 400 and some odd, how many people are in the House? 430 something, 480, I don't know. But you've got over 400 people in the House, and he's got 231 of them on his side. So he's got more than half of them on his side. They've all sat down and hashed through this thing and beat it to death. Between the 400 and some odd people, they're going to come up with an idea that can work. And there's almost impossible not to, because, you know, one person will say one thing, another. And if they hash it down and finally come up with an agreement, agreed product, chances are it's going to stand up to the test of time. And but then we have one person who has nobody to say no, that digs his heels into the sand and says, I'm not going to accept that. And that doesn't make any sense. We've got 231 or 200 some odd people, including I think it's 8 Democrats involved that have agreed to this program. And then now, granted, they have passed it on to the Senate, which is 100 people. But they weren't even given the opportunity to look at it. Even the people who would be willing to go along with it, they weren't given the opportunity to consider it. They just tabled it immediately. That's because the one person who can do that, the tabling, is Democratic, and he's going along with the president. And that's why now John Boehner has sat down and decided, I'm going to go talk to the Senate directly and not go to the president and try to go through him. So that's why President Obama is really ticked off now, because he's decided that he's not going to talk to him anymore. He's going to try to take it directly to the horse's mouth. But the problem is even if the two of them agree with that and pass it on through, still the president can veto it. And I think he would, and just because he can, which is really sad.
And taking it to the people, you know, where he was hoping to, you know, rally the people in his favor. In my opinion, talk about being out of touch. You don't hear I've not heard yet anybody going, 4 more years, 4 more years.
No, I'm hearing more people saying, kick him out exactly. At this particular point.
I mean, because usually any other president, even the Bushes, at this point in the campaign for reelection, you would hear rallies all over the news, you know, 4 more years, 4 more years, and we're just not hearing that. And I think that Obama is still living in that bubble, that he still thinks that he, as some talk show hosts call it, the Messiah. You know, he's the hope and change. Well, now we're just hoping that he will change and leave.
Really, really. And I've heard an awful lot of people in varying places on talk shows at night and television shows during the day and so on that have actually admitted that they've really changed their opinion of what Obama is and what he can do and not do radically, because I've heard several people that were like me thought, well, you put him in there for 4 years, he can't mess it up too bad, and then if we really don't like what he's done, we'll let him go. But he can mess it up too bad. He has messed it up too bad right from the beginning. And this business of blaming everything on Bush is just absurd. I mean, Bush had his problems and he had his faults, but not nearly what we're running into now. And now Obama is quoting Reagan all the time. They've gone back and found things that they can take out of Reagan's speeches and use them to his advantage, but they're usually taken out of context and they're not what was really taking place. And Reagan, although everybody seems to like Reagan, at least after the fact they do, he was not that fantastic in the first place. It's just that he did know how to take things to the people and know how to talk to the people. And the thing is, when he did that and people said things, he listened a little bit. Not totally, but he did listen a little bit. Obama doesn't ever listen to what's being sent to him at all. He's made up his mind, and that's just all there is to it. He doesn't even listen to his own advisors. He's just made up his mind, and that's what's going to happen come hell or high water. That's what I say. We're going to compromise. Now you come over and do what I tell you, and that's compromise. Well, that's not
my direction.
Yeah, always.
And speaking of compromise and not doing my business, this half of the program, by the way, is sponsored by Dancing Dog Cookies. If you haven't checked them out, check them out. If you, they're good, natural dog treats. They're made locally here in Eugene by hand and reasonably priced.
Good.
So
dog,
if
Skippy is a very good dog, and I always enjoy working with him and like to reward him for a great performance. However, I am always hesitant and very selective in the types of treats that I will give him because I worry about his health and only want to give him something that's really good for him. That's why I always reward him with Dancing Dog Cookies, because they are handmade to order from all natural ingredients and preservative free. Plus, they come in a wide variety of styles and flavors. Skippy loves them, and I'm sure you will too, so check them out at www.dancingdogcookies.com.
And if you try their products, send us an email. Tell us what you think about it, and let them know that you heard it here on Caribbean Internet News Talk Radio. Okay, now that we got the bills out of the way.
if I feed my dog Dancing Dog Cookies, will he dance?
He might. You never know. That's one of the little Scotty-type doggies, you know?
Going to have to go get a dog to find out.
That's right. Can I have a dog for my cookies?
Really? Boy.
Yeah, we're going to have Tom is the owner of Dancing Dog Cookies. We're going to have him in the show in the probably in the upcoming weeks, so and to talk about his product and stuff. But yeah, check them out. They're also available at if you go to dancingdogcookies.com, you can get a list of local retailers that do sell them, and they're really kind of fascinating looking, and they do a really good quality job. So check them out, dancingdogcookies.com.
I'm all for it. I'm all for it.
And check us out, by the way.
I have tried it.
Well, they look good enough. Actually, you could eat them. I did ask him that because there is nothing weird in them. You know, you could eat them. I wouldn't recommend it.
Someone see what they like.
Yeah.
Maybe it's cheaper than. I keep hearing people who don't have much money eating dog food. So maybe that's what I...
Well, if you get... There's some dog food that'll actually keep your teeth white.
Okay.
Yes, I got a good checkup at the dentist. No tartar at all. Well, why is that? Milk bone.
I think I'll use IPANA. I'm sorry. Debt ceiling. What is a debt ceiling? It's a cap that's set by Congress on the amount of debt the federal government can legally borrow. Now, by the way, here's the thing you may not know. The cap applies to the debt owed to the public. That's anybody who buys U.S. bonds or owed to federal government trust funds, such as those for Social Security and Medicare and things like that. The first one was set in 1917 and was set at $11.5 billion. That's billion, not trillion, but $1 billion. That was the cap. The debt limit right now is currently at $14.29 trillion. And they wanted another $1.4 trillion over the top of that. And by the time it gets to the 10-year mark down the road, we're going to be looking at $24 trillion, which is more, you know, it's not – we keep talking about putting our kids and grandkids in debt. Actually, we're putting them in bankruptcy because there's no way – if we go to $24 trillion, there's no way they can pay it. It can't be paid back. So we just simply can't do that. It's been raised 74 times already, but 10 times it's been raised since 2001. And four or five of those times have been on – well, I'm not sure about that. I have to look and see about that. But I know our debt has more than doubled in the last 2 years that Obama's been in charge of it. And that's just ridiculous because it was ridiculously high in the first place. You know, and they keep blaming Bush. But, you know, the simple fact of the matter, Bush didn't bomb the Twin Towers, but he had to do something about it. And like it or not, you had to spend money on that. And then they did had spend a lot of money to hopefully put together this House different lawmaking organizations to see that it didn't happen again. No, I don't think they went about it the right way necessarily, but they did have to go about it some way. And they have actually. We haven't been bombed since that time. So and we've come pretty darn close, I think. Three specific times. One of them was the bumbling of the guy who put the bomb together. He didn't do it right, or it would have worked. But the other two, they caught the people before they could do what they were going to do. So we have effectively kept our country safe for about the last 9 or 10 years. And that didn't come absolutely free. Now, I agree that Bush did get a little overboard when he went after Iraq. That wasn't, in my opinion, totally necessary, at least not exactly the way he did it. But it was necessary to do something there, and that cost money. And we stayed way too long. That cost way too much money. But again, it wasn't anything compared to the huge amounts of money that Obama just gave to different corporations, the car companies and so on and so forth, and banks and people. I mean, you know, the whole free enterprise economy is designed with this, the ability to go bankrupt to protect everybody and to take care of the problems that we have. If a company doesn't know how to do their business well enough to keep from going into debt so far that they can't pay it, then that's when you go bankrupt. And you either change people or change things or the company goes out of business, whatever, but it changes the way things are done. If you just hand them lots of money, that doesn't change anything. They still got the same people, they still got the same philosophy, same ideas, and they're still going to go broke a few years later. So I think it was done totally wrong. We should have let these companies go bankrupt. I mean, maybe we would only have one car company, Ford, because they're the only ones who didn't take any money from the federal government. But if that's what we ended up with, was one car company, then fine. we'd have Toyota and a bunch of these others to step in there and help. They're being made in the United States now. It was done wrong, and it was Obama who did it. Now, he listened to some people that were there before, but he had the ability to change everybody and everything at that point, and he didn't. And because he doesn't know what to do, he is lost. He's completely overwhelmed in the office, I believe.
Well, and to go kind of go along with your point, Ford did not take a loan.
Right.
They're offered. They didn't take it, and they pulled out.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We may have ended up with only one car company, and that would be Ford.
But also to throw out there, too, is again, you know, we're poor. And as much as I'd love to help my neighbor, you know, I don't have money to loan. And if you're in debt up to your eyebrows, which we are as a nation, how can we freely loan out money that we don't have?
See, that's the whole idea. That's the whole idea of this thing is we shouldn't be allowed to do that. We should not be allowed to spend money that we don't have. And we just went out and printed some. We didn't have anything to back it up, anything to do with anything. We just went out and printed more money. And that's going to bite us in the butt is what it's going to do. As I say, Moody's and S&P has already talked about messing with our credit rating. Well, just in the fact of talking about it, they've done it.
Exactly.
They haven't actually changed it, but they have actually made everybody aware, and everybody is treating us differently already.
Well, and I'm just glad that John Blumenauer and others are really...
Yeah, it's Boehner, by the way.
Boehner. Blumenauer, B-O-E-H-N-E-R.
It's pronounced Boehner.
All right, whatever.
I know it doesn't look like it, and everybody gets confused, but it's Boehner.
Okay, John Boehner, I sit corrected. That I am pleased that they're giving the president a hard time on this and standing up to their guns instead of just doing like they've done in the past and gone, okay, sure, that sounds good. We'll rally behind you in respect to the office. You know, I'm pleased that they're doing that and not trying to
get... Don't have respect for the office to a certain point. If the office is being abused, then you got to stop respecting it.
Exactly. I mean, you can still respect the office. It's just it's part of the check and balance system that really hasn't been working that well. But I'm glad to see that I'm just glad to see that there is a little bit of turmoil up there, because you know maybe that is going to bring things to light, and along with the Tea Party and the public getting more and more involved, maybe that'll bring our government back under our control. I don't know, but one thing I was going to kind of add to that, you know, yeah, you can go ahead and raise the debt limit, and just like and I brought this point up on several programs, like in Oregon here with Measure 56 and 57, I believe that they're calculating the income revenues or revenue increase by passing these new taxes and fees. But Oregon found out on 56, 57 that the source of the revenue was no longer there. In fact, had went down. In 2014, Obamacare starts taking effect. And those of us that are kind of – it's like going on food stamps, you know, where you make about a dollar too much and you can't qualify for it. If you don't fall into that category of being too poor – you're going to be stuck with the penalty the penalty that goes along if you don't have the health insurance, which could be in 2016 over $1,000 off your taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of businesses are already hesitant to open up because they don't know how that's going to affect them, because they're going to have to provide insurance for all their employees. So it's that uncertainty. So businesses aren't creating jobs. It's going to cost the citizens more money at the end of the year if they don't have health insurance. I mean, if my company that I work for provides health insurance, I could barely afford the premiums for it. But they say, well, everybody needs to have health insurance. Well, yeah, I like health insurance, but I don't not have it because I don't want it. I not have it because I can't afford it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't hear them talk about that. But the whole point is that at some point, their sources of revenue is going to dry up, and we're getting to that point.
Well, see, that's part of the difference between Republicans and Democrats. First, I want to read this one statement and try to make sure everybody understands this. The debt limit does not control or limit the ability of the federal government to run deficits or to incur obligations. Rather, the debt limit is a limit on the ability to pay for obligations already incurred. The debt limit is going to pay for things he's already bought and already spent the money on. That's why the president is running so scared. He's already spent that money. He has to try to get the debt limit up so he can pay for it. Because if he's not going to do that, then we've got to figure out what not to do somewhere, what not to spend somewhere, what not to buy somewhere in order to pay for what he's already spent. He's already spent out of control. And so that's why he's set in his heels into the sand, so to speak, to say that I've got to have that debt limit raised. That the debt limit is going to be raised. I'm quite positive of that. But we've got to set it up. And the biggest thing that the Republican plan has stated is that this will be the last time. We're not going to do this again. We're not going to go about spending all this money and then raise it again next time to pay for that money that we've already spent. We've got to keep into the position of not spending more than we have coming in. That's $120 billion a month less than they're already spending. And that's a doable thing. That's not that difficult to do. Sounds like a huge amount of money, but when you're talking about $17 trillion, it's not that much money. I mean, it's hard to think in terms of trillions, to be very honest with you. It's hard to think in terms of billions. But we are, and now we're talking about, you know, the difference between half a trillion and 17 trillion. It doesn't sound so much when you talk about it that way, but it's a huge amount of money. But the thing is, we've got to stop spending the money before we get it. We've got to start changing things to the point that we're going to get it and then spend it. And the thing is, if we've proved, and you can go back and look at the history, we've proved over and over again that if you leave the money in the hands of the people who hire people or who build businesses and things like that, then they are the ones who are going to spend the money, and then the money is going to come back in form of taxes and fees and things back to the government, and our income is going to go up, not down.
Exactly.
And a lot of people don't believe that happens. But you can go look in history. You can just look and see at the times that people have done this, and it's proven out. Why can't they just take at least what's written in black and white and accept it?
Well, let me throw this out to you as well. On CNN.com, if you do a search for I'll put a link out on the website too. How did we get into this mess is the title of the article. And it goes through history starting in January when they first started talking about all this and the events leading up to today. Reading this kind of, I don't know, it kind of gets a little bit of smoke coming out of my ears about, okay, they knew this was coming up.
Well, they've known it forever, yes.
Right. Why didn't they take it seriously? We're doing this last-minute thing. Obama took lots of vacations, lots of trips overseas, you know. There's a lot of, I don't think that during the time, and this is just my opinion, during the time that they really took it all seriously to sit down and start working things out when they had a whole year to do this, and now here we are at the last minute coming up towards the deadline, and so now they're scrambling to, you know, throw something together.
See, that's the problem. That back at the first of the year, or even before that, was when Obama put together this Gang of Six. He didn't call it the Gang of Six, I don't think, at that particular time, but he put together this bipartisan group of six people, three and three, and he gave them the instructions to come up with an answer to the problem. But he doesn't want to accept what anybody else says. He only wants it his way. He doesn't compromise. A compromise to him is you change your mind and do it my way. That's what compromise is, because I've already determined that I'm right, come hell or high water. And so when they did come up with a solution, he just bypassed it. He just said, hell no. And that, of course, made, you know, these six people a little upset because they worked legitimately hard and honestly thought they had come up with something. And they probably did. I don't know, because he didn't pass it on to us to see either. But so that's why they were sort of disillusioned and just didn't do anything after that, until the sixth person came in and had an idea and showed it to the president. And the president, of course, latched onto it because there was nothing specific about it. He had, I don't know, he said there were several pages of stuff that you could read, but nothing came down to actual numbers. It also all basically left it up to him to fill in the numbers. And, of course, we've already determined that we can't trust the numbers that he fills in, and that's the problem we have. We can't trust the president. And if you can't trust the president, I mean, there are certain things you don't trust anybody in politics with. They do lie about a lot of things, and that's something else we need to address in our country is how much lying and political – I mean, the word politics is synonymous with lies, it seems, and that's the thing we've got to change. Because if we can't trust the people who are running our country, we're in big trouble. And that's exactly where we are, in big trouble right now.
And that's why I say we need to update our system in the 21st century, you know, whether we borrow from Parliament or whatever. But we need to improve, because things can happen so quickly when you have a president or anybody that's out of control. There needs to be better checks and balance. Now, I'm going to probably mispronounce the guy's name again. John Bromauer?
Boehner.
Boehner.
Boehner. B-A-Y-N-E-R.
Okay.
That's not how it's spelled, but that's how it's pronounced.
Well, John Boehner, of course, is still giving Obama a hard time. In fact, a news item today, I guess he appeared again on Rush Limbaugh. And just to kind of, there's a quote in here. Let me just read a quick line of it. This is from the statecolumn.com. The point is the president is making. That's why he wants a $2.4 trillion blank check today that lets him continue his spending spree. If, in fact, the Joint Committee does not report, the Congress is going to have to act, and we could be right where we are today. But it's the only way to force Congress to make the cuts necessary to get our fiscal house in order.
That's right. That's right. And we've got to get that fiscal house in order, because why aren't we looking at Greece? Why aren't we looking at Greece and seeing what's happening in Greece? I mean, Greece just basically did almost exactly the same thing we're doing. They were paying their government employees and the government people and way over what they should be paying, and they were giving them benefits that was way beyond what they could afford to do when you got right down to it. And they're having people rioting in the streets right now, because when you've been making $150,000 a year for half of your life, and all of a sudden you find out it's going to be cut back to $75,000, that's a big cut. That's hard to take. And people are upset about it. And rightly are they upset about it, and rightly are they mad at their government for having done that. But the point is, all you can do is change the government, but you've already been way overpaid. You've already got the problems. You have to change it. You can't go on with it. And that's what has happened. The government of Greece has borrowed, I don't know what was, $600 billion or something from the European Union. And the European Union says, you must do this, you must do that, and you must do something else, or we're not going to give you the money. Well, in doing that, they've had to cut back on a huge amount of people and raise taxes and do lots of things that they didn't want to have to do, but they have to do it. There's no doubt, no way around it, and people are getting upset about it. And we're going to have that here in the United States. People are going to be rioting in the streets and getting upset, and it doesn't make any difference what they do. It's going to have to be done. And right now, if we were to make basic changes right now, we could do it without any real huge differences. We'd have to, first of all, the federal employees are making almost double what civilians are making at this particular point. So they'd have to cut that back. But that's not enough to do the job. We do have to cut back on military spending. We can get a huge amount of money on military spending, and we're going to have to change the way we're spending our Social Security money, because we're spending it on things that it wasn't designed to do. I mean, the people who are old enough to collect their Social Security have paid into this all this time, and their money is being squandered on other things. I'm not saying what they're doing is bad, but it not should not be taken out of Social Security. We're supporting a lot of young people who maybe need it, but we're also supporting a lot of young people who don't need it. And so we've got to do some changes there. Maybe, as I say, things are changing as to how long people live, how long people can still stay in the workforce. And so that can be changed. The date that they can retire can be moved up. I mean, we've already gone. When I was first started paying into Social Security, I was aware that I could retire at age 55.
Right.
If 55 rolled around and it became 62, and now if you want to retire at full benefits, it's 72. But the point is, people are living an extra 20 years longer than they did 60 or 70 years ago. So, you know, it's not a real hardship necessarily, but it's something we're going to have to do, and there are ways of changing it. But the thing is, the people who are already there need to be left alone. The people who have already retired and have already made their life around that amount of money that they're going to be getting from that have got to still get it. And so, and that's the Republican program the bill that has been passed already addressed all of that and addressed it, I think, properly. But we didn't give Obama what he wanted. He wants full control. He wants full ability to spend what he wants when he wants to do it. And he wants to, you know, this whole business of being able to raise taxes and just make more money whenever you want to off of everybody's back has got to stop. We've got to start being a little more responsible than that. And
he's like a little kid that's going, if you're not going to play the ball game my way, I'm taking my ball and going home.
That's exactly what it is, except that when in this particular case, he's going to take his ball and go home, and we're going to get rid of him and put somebody else in the position. We're going to let him take his ball. And I'm not even going to get into the business of the problems that I have of where he's from, because he's from Illinois. And if you take a look back at what's happened to Illinois in the last 50 or 60 years, you'll see what I'm talking about. Illinois and Chicago specifically, but all of Illinois, has been very very much on the left wing and on the verge of being illegal. Well, not even on the verge. They're just plain illegal in a lot of cases. Look at Blagojevich. He's already been found guilty of doing things. Everybody, I mean, and I'm sure it's not everybody, but everybody that gets into the news and everything I see about Illinois is all bad. I've not seen hardly anything in Illinois that has come out with good. So if the idea of putting a president in office from Illinois was a big, big, big mistake, because he's got built into him that Illinois political posture, and that's what's killing us.
And speaking of killing us, there's 26 minutes left in the program. Still time to give us a call, 646-721-9887. And from the emails, Cliff and Robin, what do you think is going to happen if the nation defaults?
Well, that depends on what you decide as defaulting, because, again, remember, defaulting on this credit limit is paying for what he has already done. It's not how much you're going to do, because he's already spent that money. So it is going to be a problem. We are going to have to find a way to pay those bills. But we can do that. It depends on what goes with that. If we default on those bills by not raising the credit debit limit, then we've got to cut back on what we're spending, and it's going to be a while. We have enough of a support from the worldwide that if we sit back and show the world exactly what we're doing, we're going to cut here and cut here and cut here, and then pay off this and this and this, and then over time we're going to pay off that and that, and we'll have enough money left over to do this and that. But you've got to put it on paper. You've got to put it down as something people can see. You can't take this idea that he's come, they've given him the Gang of Six, and just run with it and say, well, this is what I want to do, and this is what else I want to do. But it's nothing specific. I'll just do it. I promise you, I'll do it. Well, promises aren't working at this particular point. And he hasn't even promised anything. He's just said he wants his way, and that's all there is to do with it. So that's, I don't think what they call a default in this particular case is going to make any difference. I don't think we will. I think they will extend it one more time. But we didn't need to put a cap on it so that we can't keep doing this.
Right.
I mean, it's an artificial thing in the first place. It's something we've decided to put a cap on there, and then when it gets to the point, you know, that's like saying, okay, I'm going to give myself $100 a month to spend on something, clothes. And then when you've spent the entire $100 a month for that month, you say, oh, well, I've got to have that suit or that dress or that pair of shoes, so I'm going to go ahead and buy it. And we're going to, you know, raise my limit just this time. But then next month you see something else you want, and you're going to raise the limit that time too. And that's what it keeps on doing. You've got to put a cap on it that you can't go above. You got to put a thing on there that says you've got this amount of money, and if you go above it, you're not going to get any money. So you've got to either figure another way to raise money or something. And now the problem is he also wants to raise taxes. That's the other way to raise money. And you can't continue doing that because, you know, as a citizen, you can't go out and tell your boss, I bought a couple of extra pair of shoes, you got to pay me more. It doesn't work.
And we're the bosses, and that's what they keep forgetting. And because it is too easy to just say, okay, we need more money as government. We're going to raise taxes and fees. I mean, again, just like Lane County here, because of the budgetary thing, they've cut off a lot of the sheriff's patrols so that they only have 20 hours worth of manpower per day, and some officers are on call from home.
Right.
And right. They do that because they threaten what directly impacts the public. Well, that's why I say, and maybe I'm totally off base here, and if somebody has a better opinion, send us an email, talk@krbnradio.com. I think, in a way, we should go ahead and just default. And the reason being is because of the threat of Social Security checks not going out, all the, you know, Medicare, Medicaid, and all those other things not going out, services starting to close. People already are starting to get upset because I can't remember which state it was that ran out of money and they couldn't get their budget going until just recently. So they were closing state parks and people are getting really mad. And I think what it is just like saying that, okay, well, raising the national debt's going to cost each individual so much money. I can't relate to that. I can relate if I go to my state park and it's closed because of a budgetary problem, because that affects me directly. Or if this service isn't available because it affects me directly. But if it's like the national debt, I don't relate to it. I personally didn't vote to raise it. I had nothing to do with it. How does it affect me?
Well, you know, I agree with you. And in the instance of the state parks, I believe that the state parks should pay for themselves. And if they don't pay for themselves, it should not be a park. But the simple fact of the matter is if it's being run one way and then they change it, you need to let people know it's being changed before they make plans to go there and spend a week in a state park that costs nothing and find out it's going to cost them $100. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that $100 if they knew about it and could plan ahead of time for it. But if they get there and find out that it's a big surprise, that's bad. But the thing is, we need to go and look at things like that, and all of the state parks and all the federal parks and national parks or whatever need to pay for themselves. It's simple as that. There's no reason there's no right. We don't have an actual right. It's not spelled out anywhere that they give us access to state parks. It was nice while it lasted, and it was fun while it lasted, but there is a point where we have to pay for everything. But the people are not real happy about having the money taken away from them in the form of taxes. We need to have the option. And so if it means that we have to change over to a sales tax or VAT tax, that's one way of doing it. But we should simply be told what changes are going to be made. And if necessary, we can vote on them, because that, I think, is the final legitimate way of doing things, is to bring it to a vote of the people. But then the point is this: if they vote it down and vote to have the government pay for it, then they got to vote on something that allows the government to pay for it. So there's got to be a way to fund these things, and either fund them or close them or do whatever.
Well, that's my point. That's exactly my point. A lot of times, they get their money. They find ways to do it, like raising motor vehicle fees, for example. The VAT. There's a lot of stuff that they do to increase our individual costs that we have no say over. And if And the way the system is set up, if we don't like it, then we have to rally, get 20, 30,000 signatures and go through all the process and hopefully be able to get it on the ballot unless a judge vetoes it and says we can't do it. But that's why I'm saying, though, getting back to the point about let the government default, is the government's already upset at the Tea Party and they've been saying everything they can to discredit the Tea Party, because the Tea Party is basically a bunch of citizens and there's not really one person that leads the Tea Party. If people stop getting their paychecks, if they stop getting their services, if they stop getting a lot of these things, it's going to get people mad enough to get involved. And maybe all the games that go on in Washington, and even some of the games locally here, will come out in the forefront, and it's going to force them to start cleaning up their act.
I agree with that. And the thing is, we need to have the opportunity to vote on all this kind of stuff. And the idea of the government needs to be made smaller, not bigger. And I think almost everyone would agree with that. I don't know of anybody who would argue against that. But on the same token, they don't want their benefits to go down. So there has to be a little cut in everything, not big cuts in certain things, because people can accept a little bit of money, a little loss here and a little loss there, perhaps. And there'll be some people hollering and screaming and yelling. But the point is, if everybody has to give a little, but that's not what that may be what Obama says, not what he means.
You know, he calls it shared responsibility. We're already giving. If you look at how much, how much I get, I'm not going to say out figures, so I don't want to give that out publicly, but how much I gross versus how much I net per month, it's a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah.
That I'm donating, and you know, we're living on the edge here. I mean, there's stuff we are sacrificing, as Obama says, shared sacrifice. There's a lot of things that we are sacrificing because we just don't have the money. We cannot, personally, in this household, we cannot afford an increase in expenses. I mean, we already got, I got one vehicle, for example, that gets better mileage than my other vehicle, but I can't afford a license. I don't have the money. I got a windshield I got to replace because I washed the car yesterday and it cracked the windshield. By law, I got to replace that thing, but somehow I got to come up with $244 that I don't have. And I can't go to my boss and say, "Hey, boss, I need a windshield. Can you give me some money for it?"
That's right. That's the thing. See, that's the difference. That's where Obama seems to think he can just go out and take the money from everybody and then go ahead and spend it. It should be made more difficult for him to get that money. I mean, and again, the word cap, which everybody gets upset about hearing, but the fact is there's got to be a cap on the amount of money that you can spend, and anything over that, you just can't do it. And so you've got to make money somewhere else or make room somewhere else for it. So basically, and I understand in your situation, but in most instances in home operating your home, you need to leave a small amount of money set aside every month for emergencies like your windshield.
If you have the surplus to do that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You need to, if things, again, if you don't have the ability to do that, you need to change something so that you can. Something needs to be different. Now, I know, and I'm not picking on you because I know you've done a lot of your changes already, but in most instances, you can refinance your house or you can not buy something or not go somewhere or not do something and save a few dollars each month. And then after a while, you've got enough of a little pad in there that you can do things. But the simple fact of the matter is, the federal government doesn't even come close to that. They just add on more and add on more and add on more and spend more and more and more. And there's no necessity for it. There's a lot of places in the federal government, in the federal budget, that we can make little cuts here and little cuts there. And if enough of those cuts add up, when you're talking, you know, $14 to $17 trillion, it doesn't take long to bring home that $120 billion a month and not spend it so that you don't have to come up with it.
Well, two things real quick I'll say on that point. And by the way, 15 minutes left in the program, 646-721-9887. Still time to get your calls in. Lines are open. Two points I'll make. One is like what you said about refinancing. Well, yeah, I tried to refinance on this house, couldn't do it, and now can't do it because I had to file bankruptcy last year. And secondly, it depends on your income. You know, right now I'm not making the money I used to make. Two, as far as the way they spend money, I-5 over by your area of the state, Cottage Grove, how many years did they work on that intersection, that strip of I-5? Quite a few years, I believe, is working on that center medium.
I don't know.
Well, anyways, from what I remember, at least 2 or 3 years. And even there's some bridge projects, some very simple bridge projects and road projects going on that they're saying it's going to take, you know, 2 years to do. In my short time I was in North Dakota, they took a 4-lane freeway, you know, two going in each direction, closed down two of those lanes, stripped the freeway down to the dirt, recycled, repaved, opened the freeway, a 14-mile section in 3 months.
Well, look at the news and see what they did in California just either last weekend or the weekend before. They closed the freeway for 3 days and rebuilt it and added a lane in 3 days.
Exactly. So what is actually you're getting your money's worth? Something that takes 3 days or 3 months or something that takes 2 years?
Well, when you're talking about California, you can't have 2 years. You can't close one of those freeways for 2 years because people use it. I mean, you're talking about a 6-lane freeway or an 8-lane freeway that you're closing down. And if it's got that much traffic on it, you just can't close it down for long periods of time. And they did for just one weekend. And everybody was upset, but they promoted it and advertised it for so much. Everybody knew it was going to happen.
Well, I understand that, but my point is, it's not so much the fact that they closed it and opened it. My point is that when you're looking at spending money, do you keep people on a project that for 2 years long and how much it's going to cost to pay the people for that project versus if you hit it hard and get it done within a shorter period of time, which is actually cheaper in the long run to do? I would say the shorter period of time.
Not really, because you use more man-hours. Comes out to about the same as far as man-hours is concerned. It's going to take X amount of man-hours to do what you're going to do, regardless whether they use 60 men and do it all in 1 hour or one man and do it in 60 hours. It's the same amount of money.
Well, okay. Well, you make a good point there. So I'll give you that one in that case.
But the point is we've got to do something about all of this, and it's going to start by making the government smaller. That's the thing we've got to do. And I know a lot of people don't think that way, but in my opinion, I'm the one paying taxes, and I'm the one that doesn't want to pay as many taxes, and so we've got to make the government smaller. This government is encroaching into my life way too much as it is, constantly encroaching and doing and requiring me to do things like right now, right here at home. They're talking about putting the 75-foot encroachment along the side of the rivers so that they can have a Clean Water Act. But the thing is, they're taking private property that I already own and saying that I can't do anything on this last 75 feet of it up to the river. This is property that I already have, that I own, that they're going to take away from me effectively. They're not going to put anything on there, but they're not going to allow me to put anything on there at all. And so that's getting carried away. That's too much as far as I'm concerned. They're telling me what I can and can't do. They're telling me that I must, for example, wear a helmet if I'm going to be riding a motorcycle, or I've got to wear seat belts if I'm in my car. I mean, a lot of people think that's a logical move. To me, I don't. If I don't want to protect myself, I shouldn't have to protect myself. And they keep telling me, well, how much money it costs everybody if I don't do that. It doesn't cost everybody a lot of money. If we're talking about me hurting myself and having to fix it, I have to pay for that. I have to have insurance to pay for that. The insurance companies are private companies. They're not government companies. It's not government funds that are being used for that. And the government is getting too invasive. They're telling me too much about what I can do with my own private life, and I don't like that. And so we need to make the government smaller. And if the government is smaller, then they're not going to spend the money trying to enforce these laws that are ridiculous in the first place.
Well, let me. I got a comment and question for you in 10 minutes remaining. 646-721-9887. Still time to give us a call. My comment is a recent sting that went on in Eugene last Thursday, where Eugene police, and this is kind of going along with the deal with the seatbelts, where Eugene police on the overpass of Interstate I-5 stood there with binoculars and a radar gun looking for truck drivers not wearing seatbelts. And they pulled over and cited over 40 truck drivers for that. And that was sponsored by the Oregon Department of Transportation and funds from the federal government. And this is, again, from the same police department, Eugene Police, that is crying that they don't have the manpower to patrol. But the question I have for you, and again, in the last 8 minutes remaining, John Boehner, who's been really giving President Obama a hard time, and, you know, being Speaker of the House, you know, he's second in line for presidency outside of the vice president. Do you think that maybe one of the reasons why he's really standing up to the plate like this is like the attention that Chris Christie got for, you know, being bold, that maybe John Boehner might be running for president in 2012?
No, I don't think so. In this particular case, Boehner is already a major player. He doesn't, I mean, he actually probably would take a pay cut if he became president rather than doing what he's doing. I'm not sure. But it wouldn't be, I don't think he's interested in becoming president, to be honest with you. And he could do it if he wanted to, but I don't think that's the chance. It's not just him. He's got 231 people behind him are saying the same thing. He's you know, not doing this all on his own. And he's doing this in response to the, 26 people or whatever it is that were elected this last election, because the Tea Party, or whomever, you can blame it on the Tea Party if you want to. It's not all just the Tea Party. People are tired of being told what to do, and they're tired of the government getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. It needs to get smaller and smaller. There are a lot of people in the House and a lot of people in the Senate. Why they don't... See, the people in the Senate, since the Senate is democratically controlled, are not being allowed to voice their opinion. They're, you know, like I say, when they had the House passed that bill and took it to the Senate, they tabled it immediately. That was not the whole Senate, of course, that did that. That was the Democratic people who run the Senate. They just tabled it without even talking about it or showing it to people. And that's not really fair. The only thing that worries me is that if we go through this whole bit and we do get rid of the president and change him for a Republican president and change enough people in the Senate so that it is Republican dominated, then we're going to have a whole Republican dominated government. And I don't think that's going to be any better than a Democratic dominated government. It needs to be divided. It needs to have both sides representative. But to have the president digging in and vowing never to change his mind and never to come along and join the party, that's the problem. We've got a bunch of people. Nobody gets along with anybody else, and we need to change certain things about our government that allow them to work together. And it gets down to the basics of how people, the morality. It's what it gets down to, the morality of our entire population.
And that's one thing I agree with you 100% on. I get kind of tired of hearing, like, Obama taking representatives from both parties out to the Gulf so they can better get along. It's like, you know, this isn't two separate countries that you're trying to negotiate with. The whole point of it is to give a little bit of different opinions from different values, Republican values, Democratic values, et cetera. But I think we've gotten so far away from those ideals that the split between the Republicans and Democrats is actually, I think, hurting our country instead of helping it.
Well, we're doing things like, you know, the things that should be changed is, for example, this idea of tabling this bill when it got to the Senate. That should not be allowed. That's something that is not part of the way things are supposed to be done. It needs to be given some sort of an airing so people can decide if they like it or don't like it. The idea of one party being able to just table it and not even show it or even allow the other party to even consider it That's the wrong thing to do. It has to be brought up and it has to be debated and voted on. You know, if you debate it and it takes a long time to debate it and you ultimately end up voting it down, that's fine because at least everybody's had a chance to decide. But to just take it and table it and put it away, and nobody can see it or nobody can act on it in any way, that's not being the way the thing is supposed to be done. That's not the way a two-party system is supposed to work. That's a one-party system, and that's what we've got at this particular point in time. So we've got to get back to, and I'm sure that these are all just, these are laws that are already there that we are either bending or changing or are ignoring. And so we've got to get back to doing things the way our Constitution said they're supposed to be done, and instead of just doing it to be what's convenient at the moment. And
what's going to happen if we actually have a real serious thing? I mean, like, I'll give Bush credit when the 9/11 happened. You know, he did take charge, and I was actually kind of proud of him at that moment. But what happens if like, for example, if we can't make a decision over this, what's going to happen if we're, like, say, attacked? Are we going to get together? Well, I think that, you know, the invaders are actually here to, you know, they don't really understand what they're doing. Well, I think we should field and sit down and take a vote, and maybe we come back from recess. And
well, that's where there are laws that give the president the option of taking over and doing things under an emergency situation. But we've got to redefine what is emergency and what is not. And again, what is happening is this thing of Obama taking those rules and those laws and bending them to his position to get us into war in Syria and Libya and all of these places. That's not a part of the way things are supposed to be done. Okay, we're not in a war with Libya because we don't have any boots on the ground. Well, that's a bunch of crap. We're supporting it and we're sponsoring it and we're paying for it. So we are in that war, like it or not. And that we shouldn't be. We shouldn't be the ones in that war. So that's one of the things we've got to do is the only way you can stop things like that is to dry up the funding. And if you've set it up so that that he can't fund it, then he can't do it. Simple as that. Exactly. And so,
even in the Libya thing, you know, the president pretty much told Congress that I'm going to do it anyways.
Yeah, exactly.
And so what do you do when you have a runaway president or runaway?
At least when Bush went and did the thing with Iraq, he did literally declare honest to God war on the country, and which gave him the permission to do that. And so, and I think almost everybody was basically with him, although most people thought he was in it for the wrong reason. They thought he was in it to try to redeem what his father didn't finish. His father didn't finish it on purpose, by the way. It wasn't a mistake. It wasn't an omission. He had gone to where he thought he should be and stopped. But and nobody knows for sure about that. That's just my opinion as to why Bush stepped in and did what he did. But it was true that the whole world was under the impression they had weapons of mass destruction. I mean, all the other countries thought they did too. So we weren't alone in that. We were maybe misled and misled. Everybody had that same opinion and same idea. So consequently, it wasn't just, I mean, he didn't make as big a mistake as a lot of people thought. Anyhow, that's another story. But I'm not trying to defend, I guess I am in a way trying to defend Bush because I don't think he was that far off line.
It'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. And I just hope that John Boehner keeps the pressure on. And, you may say, well, yeah, we're making it harder than it needs to be. But sometimes, there has to be pain.
Well, the simple fact is I hope Boehner remembers the fact and keeps in mind the fact that he has 231 people behind him. And President Obama basically has one.
Exactly. Well, we're out of time. Again, join us again next week, same time.
Have a good day, everybody. See you.
Be sure to check us out on the internet at www.krbnradio.com or email us with your show ideas at talk@krbnradio.com. This is KRBN Internet News Talk Radio.